Good morning. It is 10:03 a.m. We are here today, July 23rd, 2025, in the OPA hearing room, Suite 907 at the DNA building in Hagatnya, Guam, for the motion hearing of OPA PA 25-008, Far East Equipment Company LLC versus the General Services Agency. Presiding over the hearing today is Public Auditor Benjamin J.F. Cruz. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Jared Hernandez and Tirza Bagana. Will appellant Far East please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Thank you. Michael Berman, appearing on behalf of Far East Equipment Company, LLC, as the appellant, and for today's proceeding, the respondent to a motion to dismiss.
Thank you. Will purchasing agency GSA please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Graham Botha, Interim Counsel for GSA, and to my left is Andy Kidigwa, the CPO.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Counsel, this morning we're on a motion to dismiss. It was filed by GSA. Are you ready to proceed, Mr. Botha?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. GSA filed its motion to dismiss. Basically, we set out the background. The bids were filed. There were three bidders that came forward and expressed interest. There was, as in all the bids, there was a question, an answer period. While there were questions submitted, none of the bidders, including Far East, submitted any questions about whether or not a letter of credit was acceptable for that. The special instructions made it clear that there were only two forms that were acceptable to GSA, and that was basically a surety bond or a cashier's check. When the bids were opened, the bid abstract lists the three companies, Morico, Far East, and International Royal, and International Royal provided a Bank of Guam cashier's check, which was appropriate under the instructions, and Morico provided a bid bond, and Far East provided a Bank of Guam letter of credit, which was not authorized under that. GSA sent out the notices and basically rejected the bid no bid security or insufficient bid security because it didn't match what was in the instructions or as provided in the statute. GSA has laid out the timeline. It is our position that 14 days has come and gone and that, as far as, in order for the OPA or anyone else to hear the case, it has to be a timely protest. Our position is that certainly at the very least, when he got the specs, question and answer period, at any opportunity during that time, Far East could have raised a question and properly should have filed, a protest at that time based on the fact that, if they had any questions or had concerns about what was required for a bid bond, and they didn't. And it was clear on the special reminder that was signed by Mr. Lepiaco as the president of Far East Company, LLC, that two things were eligible to submit for the bid bond, cashier's check or surety bond. He signed that, it was notarized, and obviously, I'm presuming, Far East has been in business for many years. Either they didn't read it or his staff didn't present it to him correctly. And so it would be our position that, based on the timelines for that the protest was not filed in a timely manner. In alternative, however, Your Honor, that should there be a finding that the protest was filed in time, Far East would still not prevail. GSA, has to award to the lowest responsive bidder. And they need to, responsive bidder has to conform to all material aspects of the invitation for bid. It's pretty clear that they didn't meet those acceptability requirements, and 5 GCA 5212E requires that bids be rejected for non-compliance with the bid security requirements unless it's determined the bid fails to comply in a non-special matter with the security requirements. I would submit that when there are two choices, the special reminders state that, the bid is clear on that, that submitting something that's not called for, not allowed for in the bid is not something that's non-substantial, therefore, that even on the merits of the case, were we to get that, that they would still not qualify. And so we would just ask that our motion be upheld and that this matter be dismissed, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Berman.
Thank you, Your Honor. The basic core facts that Mr. Botha recites that we agree to, we don't agree to his arguments, but the basic facts involved we agree with. I did attach a chronology of the case as an exhibit. To core down what's at issue today, laying aside the motion to dismiss briefly, basically it's line of credit versus cashiers or certified check or surety bond. And our position will be, if we get to the merits, is a dollar is a dollar is a dollar. I prepare commercial loan documents for the Bank of Guam. I prepare promissory notes, line of credit, all the time. And I'll leave that for now. I just want the court to understand that's the core issue. They're saying a line of credit isn't good enough, but it has to be a cashier's check or a surety bond. Putting that to the side, because that's not why we're here today, if you were to crank the numbers, figure out what does this really mean? What if our client's cashier, what if our client's line of credit had been accepted? That would have saved the government $30,859.08. Morico's bid, which was accepted because they met the dollar rule, was $30,000 above our client's. Our client's product was acceptable, but because of this dollar dispute, the government lost $30,000. Having said that, we're not here to argue that today, but that is the big picture. And if the court were to review, which is part of the record, there's an interoffice memorandum dated April 2, 2025 by the Chief Procurement Officer. It's the bid analysis. And this bid analysis breaks down the three bidders, what their bids were on the two pieces of property, and what is the loss to the government, which is over $30,000. Having said that, I'll now move to the motion to dismiss and the discussion of what opposing counsel is saying. He's saying it's untimely. Our client's position was the bid award was April 2. The bid protest was April 7, 5 days later. That was basically, and then that protest was denied April 24. And then the formal appeal, which we're here today on, was May 9. So our position at the outset is the appeal was filed within 5 days. The second appeal, which brings us here, if you don't count the day of the decision, April 24, and if you don't count May 9, which was the day the appeal was lodged, that was 14 days. However, opposing counsel is arguing that the 14 days is jurisdictional. You miss by one day, you lose. Well, that's what the U.S. Supreme Court says on appeals to the U.S. Supreme Court, but that's not where we are here. We're here in the spirit of public interest and saving the government $30,000, and we'd ask the court to accept a liberal point of view on the timing and let this go to trial. Let's have a full hearing. Let me bring in an expert on banking practices, so you will see this is a distinction without a meaning. Line of credit is equal to a certified check or a surety bond, and the government shouldn't lose $30,000 because of some strict interpretation on timing. That's my position.
Anything else?
No. That's all I have for
announcement. Mr. Botha.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would note, Your Honor, I, as far as the time of this and when it starts or when it should have, I mean, I think the case law that I've studied in my motion, the duty-free case and all the rest of it is pretty clear on its face that, in fact, jurisdiction is an issue. And I would submit, Your Honor, that we certainly disqualify other bidders for having a problem with the bid bond or anything else. I think this is nothing different from that. While prices sometimes are lower, and I do concede Mr. Berman's point that his client may have had a lower cost, but didn't comply with requirements that we require of every bidder. And so, Your Honor, we would just submit that case law is clear on the timing, and even without that, Far East did not comply with the requirements set forth in the bid.
Your position on the timing is that the 14 days should run from the day that Mr. DeLimitiak was signed the...
Yes, Your Honor. And
because
certainly...
Because at that point, he knew that the special instruction was a cashier's check or a surety bond.
Yes, Your Honor. That would be our thing at the very least that's when he knew it was, because he sat before a notary. I mean, no doubt his staff prepared the documents, but he sat before it and knew that there were two options. And obviously at that point, the staff had provided him, I mean, and it is attached to the complaint, with a Bank of Guam letter of credit.
And the position of the government is that the surety could be provided only in two ways: the bond, a surety bond, or a cashier's check.
That is the government's position, Your Honor. The statute does say that those are the two acceptable forms, and there are no other forms at this time the GSA has authorized.
And if, for some reason, a bidder couldn't provide a cashier's check and provided cash, would that be acceptable?
Good question, Your Honor. I believe that the cashier's check is for the benefit of the Treasurer of Guam, because obviously GSA does not do their own accounting. And it would seem that cash has, you know, recording problems and all the rest of it. I'm not sure I've ever seen anyone bring cash to a bid opening.
No, I understand, but Mr. Berman's position is that the line of credit is the same thing as cash, and it's the same thing as a surety bond and a cashier's check.
Well,
but you're insisting that your IFB was clear that only two forms were acceptable.
Well, I would say both in the bid itself, Your Honor, and the special instructions was pretty clear. It's highlighted pretty clearly as to what the two acceptable forms are. Your Honor, I would note that there is a difference for the Grisby as the way they're done for the letter of credit, in that generally it has an expiration date. The intention, at least for supplies and goods and services, is that the winning bidder, either the cashier's check or the surety bond, converts from a bid bond into a performance bond without any other things doing it. If you'll note on the Bank of Guam letter of credit, it has a date. I believe it's good for 90 days. So obviously, it's expired now, as time has passed, so it would not be able to be converted to a performance bond. It would have to be reissued, I guess, by the bank. So there is a distinction, whereas cashier's check, it's held, it's held until obviously the performance is sufficient, or even the surety bond, it converts into from the bid bond to the performance bond, should there be a winning bidder, and then the losing bidders, they just call it and pick up either their cashier check or surety bond, and it's released to them.
Mr. Berman, your clients,
yes, sir,
have been in practice in business on Guam for decades.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
With an IFB, was any question raised as to the fact that there were only two things listed, and they were providing a bank line of credit rather than a cashier's check?
I believe
did they, Did they question that when they picked up the bid or want to challenge that? Is a line of credit there the way that they always provide surety? And if it is,
yes.
And if the bond, if the IAB said that there were only two things, would it not have behooved them to, during the question and answer period, ask whether or not a line of credit would be acceptable? Or if they saw that in the original IFB and they had other government agencies had allowed for line of credit, shouldn't they at the onset when they received the invitation to bid questioned it or challenged it? Wouldn't the 14 days start to run from either one of those two dates?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you for your questions. What my client tells me, and I believe what he will testify to if this goes to the merits, is that he's always done business like this. He was miffed to find out that they would care that there's a meaningless distinction between a letter of credit and a cashier's check and a surety bond. I'd also like to advise the court, and I think the court's well aware, a cashier's check is not limitless. It can't sit here for 8 years. It's still good. The bank's not going to honor that. So the distinction opposing counsel's talking about, well, these are limitless instruments, but this other one has a limit. I don't buy that. We can bring bankers in here. They're not going to agree to that. These instruments are timeless. Also, I'd like to argue, Your Honor, not argue, at least submit to the court, that the government is so concerned about making sure they get their money, but $30,000, well, we don't care about that. Here's a bid right here. It's $30,000 below, but they're going to quarrel over this instrument versus this instrument, but they're going to lose $30,000? Isn't that hosting themselves on their own petard? I think we should look through what's going on here. They're losing $30,000, and they're relying on an abstract that I doubt if any banker here will agree with. Having said that, the government's acting in good faith, I understand. And everything the court is saying is true. I accept that, too.
I've been trying to get the Supreme Court to clarify their jurisdictional argument that we have no jurisdiction if the timing issue is against us, if 14 days have elapsed. I have been issued, granted motions that were even more ridiculous than this, hoping that the Supreme Court would say that those weren't, jurisdiction wouldn't have, I mean, the time wouldn't have started at that point. I've yet to get a decision, an opinion from them. But they have been insistent, and they followed up DFS with another decision where they're saying that 14 days it's jurisdictional, and we don't have jurisdiction after that until such time as the Supreme Court provides them with further guidance. I will have to grant the motion as depriving the OPA of jurisdiction. The appellant can and should either protest that when the IFB did not list line of credit, since they had been practicing that for a while, and that why there were only two. And when the special instructions were given, they had 14 days from that to protest the special instruction. Neither was done. It's unfortunate that the government's going to lose $30,000, but on jurisdictional issues, I have to grant it, because otherwise I have no business. is, hearing those facts. The motion's granted.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We're off the record at 10:24 a.m.